thank you all for being here and for being coming more informed voters tonight. We have two candidates for this school board here. Excuse me. I'm getting over a little bit of a cold, so hopefully I don't have to do that too often. But we have two great candidates tonight, and are going to hear a bit about them. A couple of things first. As Colleen already said, but just a reminder, please turn the cell phones off or turn the ringer off now. And obviously, if you absolutely have to make that call or get that call, please stand up and walk to the back and outside before you start talking, since the sound does carry from that hallway very easily. And we don't want to disrupt the proceedings here tonight. Reminder that please also sign in. We'd like to know how many people were here and who you all are. The Wrigley Association has a $15 a year membership. You don't need to be a member to enjoy our events or come to those forums or the many things doing the community, but it certainly is appreciated. $15 a year is not very much to support the things that that the Wrigley Association does in the community, like the performances in October with Broadway and Wrigley, and the cleanups and the forums and these monthly meetings, which happen on the first Monday of each month. If you put your email on there, you'll also get on our email list if you're not already for announcements of these meetings and other things that may be going on that you should want to be aware of if you live in this community. Also, my daughter is a Girl Scout, and she is selling cookies in the back, so on your way out, you should please consider buying some cookies from her, and that will help her. she'll be in the back, ready to take your money in exchange for you know, sugary treats. So, let's see, you mentioned the translation already. I wanted to mention coming up this month, because it wasn't mentioned already, we have a program each year that we help train people for the Wrigley River Run, which happens in June. Vernon Rudd, who's in our audience here, has been training people for years and is a veteran marathon runner. And anybody interested in participating, we'll be starting on March 20th with short walks and runs, building up to being able to run 5 and 10 kilometers in June with the rest of the community. So if you're interested in that, Vernon, you want to stand up and wave so people know who to talk to? There's Vernon. So talk to Vernon afterwards if you're interested in that, and it's for beginners or, you know, experienced athletes alike, and it's a lot of fun. So we meet in the community and run around here. But enough about that. Let me get to the reason most of you all assume are here tonight is the candidates forum. The rules tonight are going to be very simple, pretty straightforward. Both of our candidates are going to have 3 minutes to introduce themselves to the audience tonight. And then we will be taking, I have a number of questions that have already been submitted. If you have a question, if you think of one while you're sitting here, or you have one already and you haven't written it down, there are some note cards and pencils in the back. Please please grab one, write it down, bring it over here to the side, and then they'll bring it up here. And basically that's just to make sure if there's any duplicates, they'll weed those out. And then I'll go through the questions, and we'll try to get to as many as possible. Hopefully we can get to every question you guys submit this evening. Before we wrap up, somewhere around 8:15, 8:30 is our goal of finishing, give or take, depending on your questions and interest level. So, right. So tonight we have two candidates. We have our incumbent Felton Williams and our challenger Ricardo Linares. And gentlemen, Felton, since as the incumbent, I'll give you the honor of guessing. Do I have a one or a two behind my back? It's a two. Ricardo, would you like to go first or second? You'll defer? Okay. Well, you have a microphone there. Let's make sure that works. Before you get started, we have Aronia here in the front row. She'll be doing our timing for you. She's got you have 3 minutes for your opening statement, and then after that, we'll do 90 seconds per question. She's going to be holding up a green at 60 seconds, a yellow at 20, and when you're down to 10 seconds, you know you need to wrap up, and she'll hold the red and get the gong to pull you off stage. So, are you ready, Aronia? All right, the floor is yours, Felton.
Good evening, Felton Williams. And before I get started, I wanted to acknowledge my fellow board member, John McGinnis, who's sitting back in the back, and Connie, not a fellow board member, but Connie Zippo, who's with County Supervisor Don Kanabe. Connie. I've been on the board for this is my eighth year on the board, two terms. And during my tenure, and I represent Area 2 of the district, I can say during that time, two-thirds of our elementary schools in Area A, my district, my area, are at 800 or above on the API, Academic Performance Index. We've seen those scores go up during this period of time. Those schools are achieving very highly. And today, just before coming here, we recognize 19 schools in the district who have achieved APIs above 800. And four of those schools are in my district. They are Roosevelt, Webster, Butler, and Franklin. And I was very, very pleased. There's a major increase in our college going rate. There's a major reduction in truancy and dropouts thanks to the collaboration between the district and the city prosecutor, Doug Halbert. District-wide accomplishments. The district was a winner of the Eli Broad Award for the best urban school district in America in 2003. And we were also nominated for that same award in 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. That award recognizes school districts across the United States who raise the academic performance of students of color. And that has been a mainstay in the school district here in Long Beach Unified. This year, the district was recognized by...
You can start wrapping up, Felton.
...by McKinsey for the best, one of the top 20 urban school districts in America. Thank you very much.
Floor is yours, Ricardo.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. How are you guys doing? Good?
Yeah.
A little louder. I know it's 7 o'clock, but we have about another hour or two to get through this. So I want to welcome everyone. I want to especially thank the Wrigley Association for hosting us tonight. I want to thank you for coming out and getting informed about the school board elections. My name is Ricardo, and I am running for Board of Education District 2. I'm running because I want to improve transparency in the district, mainly in the decision-making process by bringing parents, teachers, and school employees to the table. I want to increase graduation rates, and not just graduation rates, but make sure that our kids are going to a university. I want our kids to attend vocational trainings if they don't want to go to a university. You guys don't believe me, but I'm 36 years old. I grew up in Long Beach. I've been here in the district 19 years. I've been in Long Beach for 26, and I'm only 36 years old. I went to Long Beach Unified. I graduated from Lakewood High, joined the Marine Corps right after that, served for 8 years. After I served, I came back and became actively engaged in my neighborhood, doing neighborhood cleanups and stuff like that. I quickly got appointed to the Citizen Police Complaint Commission, where I serve as vice chair and chairman of the commission. I worked on redevelopment as a member of the Central Project Area Committee. I've worked for Council District 7. I worked for Council District 9. And for the last 2 years, I've been a parent leader at my daughter's school. So thank you for being here, and I'll get on with the questions.
All right, thank you, Ricard. I think it's probably best to hold most of our applause to keep the proceedings going until the end, and we'll have a chance to show our appreciation for both of the candidates who've sacrificed their own personal time to try to serve the public. So I appreciate both of them being here tonight and running for office. Well, let's see, Felton, since you started, well, the first question we'll start with Ricardo, and we'll alternate of who goes first and second. We'll start with the big issue. Got several questions on this already, and of course is the budget and the layoffs. And we've school budget seems to be shrinking each year. We've had a number of layoffs and belt tightenings around the district. So what are with all the possible layoffs and coming along? And school budget, what kind of specific things do you suggest that we do to balance the school budget in the future and prevent this from being an annual occurrence?
That's a great question to start with. 4 years ago, District 2 was promised that the focus for the budget will be to preserve reading, writing, and math classes, and then put everything else on the table. The last 3 years, this district has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on contracting and consulting. This year alone is $33 million. Last year, it was $35 million. The year before that, it was $45 million. If we're really serious about putting everything on the table, then we should have put these items on the table and preserved some of the classrooms like English, math, and science instead of cutting those classes and taking away from our kids' ability to learn. That will be my focus on the taking on the budget.
First of all, the fact that the district is rated very highly in terms of academic performance and sending kids to college has not interfered with their ability to learn. Secondly, in terms of the contracting that he's referred to and the cost for those contracts, most of the money that's involved in the contracts are in Measure K bond money, where we hire contractors to carry out those contracts. Measure K bond money is not money to pay teacher salaries. That's separate and apart from teacher salaries. Secondly, we write a lot of grants. We bring in millions of dollars in grants, and the grants are not part of teacher's salary money. So basically, you need to really look very carefully at, you know, what's being said about contractors and the money that's being spent. Similarly, the city of Long Beach does an excellent job in bringing in contractors as well. So, you know, I would advance the thought and theory that we should look at them the same way. But again, in terms of the money that he might be referring to, contractors, again, that money is tied up in money that is not part of the state-funded for teacher salaries.
All right, next question will be for you, Felton, and we'll stay on the budget, and I assume a lot of our discussion will be on the budget this evening. And with the threat of layoffs again this year, is there a threat that we may be closing schools in the near future as a result of the budget, and do you or do you not think it's a good idea, or do you foresee in the future that it would be a good idea to consolidate or close some of our schools?
We prepared two scenarios. We prepared a worst-case scenario. We prepared a scenario that's based on a more moderate condition that we will get the governor's proposed tax increase approved. The less moderate, the one that is based on the fact that we don't get it approved means that we're going to have some very deep and ugly cuts. And unfortunately, everything is on the table. For the school districts in this state and other states that have not taken prudent action with respect to their budgets, those schools have been subject to state takeover. One thing that we don't want to see in Long Beach, we do not want to see state takeover. The teachers represent the biggest group in our district and any school district. And while we've been able to keep cuts away from the teachers group for a number of years, that flexibility is diminishing as each day goes along. What we've been able to do with funds from categorical programs is that we were able to get the state to give us waivers, and we were able to take that money and pay salaries. But we've run out of wiggle room, frankly. We've been dealing with this for a number of years now. And at this point, we have to pass a budget that the county will approve, and it has to be a 3-year budget. It's not a 1-year budget. So for 3 years, the county says, show us that you're solvent. And basically, we have to be able to show the county where we're going to how we're going to be solvent and stay in business. So, you know, that's the irony of our budget. Our budget is open. It's available. It's not a secret. It has to go through a certain levels of review to include the county and the state, and that budget is open.
Okay. Your time is up on that question. If I could give a very, 10-second follow-up to question. So are you saying that in the secondary, you have two plans, is what you're saying, and one is if this tax is passed, that thing, you know, you have a certain set of plans. If it is not passed, are you saying that you foresee schools will be closed, or were you saying that you expect that to be felt by the teachers, or both?
If that plan is not passed, everything is on the table. Everything's okay. On the table.
All right, Ricardo, and you can have a little bit extra time since he went over.
Thank you. We already closed, well, the district already closed three schools, two last year, one this year, with one other school being modified as a, I believe, as a vocational high school. I believe we shouldn't close down any more schools. You know, we have schools that are needed in their neighborhood, but the fact that we're building new schools doesn't make sense to me. So closing any more schools would not make sense in dealing with the budget. But going back to Measure, to the contracting and consultants, he talks about Measure K being a large part of it. And when I see in the agenda items where we're hiring consultants to do nutritionist enhancement and nutritionist family service enhancements, that's not part of Measure K. Those are actual consultants being paid by the school district. When we have employees who are actually, those employees are in Head Start, who are teaching our kids how to eat properly in neighborhoods where we don't have markets sometimes. We don't have ability to buy fruits and vegetables. So Head Start is one of the places where they get our kids get, you know, this teaching. But I wouldn't close down any more schools. I would fight to keep the schools that we have now and make sure that our kids have a safe and learning environment to move forward.
And Ricardo, next question, we'll stick with you here. And this is, again, related to a budgetary-related issue, not exactly on the line of last ones, but somebody in the audience asked about this, says their daughter's currently in a combo class, and that this is something that's being done in some of the schools. I know my daughter's in second grade. I know that's they're talking about doing some combo classes next year in her school. What's your opinion of combo classes? Do you think this is a good idea or a bad idea? And if that's something that's being done to conserve funds, what would you do? You know, what's something specific you would do instead to preserve the funds?
That's a very bad idea. For a second and third grader to be in the same classroom and being taught by the same teacher, it doesn't make sense. For one, if you're teaching second grade level instruction, the third grader is going to be bored. And then if you're teaching third grade level class instructions, the second grader is going to be like, what's going on here? They're going to feel like they're not learning. So, of course, no, we shouldn't have that. The district did that, I believe, last year. Their position is that they were able to preserve 62 teaching positions by doing that. But honestly, it's not helpful to the child. It becomes frustrated for the parents and the family at home because the children are not learning. And frankly, if we really looked at our budget, I believe we can find some funds to fund teachers, to keep teachers in the classroom. So, yeah, that's a very bad idea.
And do you have something specific? You mentioned 62 teachers were saved by that measure. Do you have something that you feel would offset that in whole or parts?
Yeah, looking at the contracting, the consultants, getting rid of some of this extra fat and making sure we have teachers in the classroom where they belong, teaching our kids, making sure we have nurses at our schools so that they can take care of our kids when they get hurt, making sure we have safety officers so that our kids are safe and not have to worry about how they're going to get home from school to their house.
Thank you. Felton, you can have a little bit of extra time since I asked the follow-up on Ricardo.
You know, as a school district, we would love to be able to keep all those folks working. That would be our ideal. And we have worked very diligently to try to figure out ways to do that. This is one of the few school districts where we really do care about the people who work for us. Unfortunately, the budget is another reality. Now, the fact that he keeps referring to consultants really truly underscores the lack of information that's there. As I said earlier, many of our consultants come out of grants and Measure K money. And so that money is spent to bring some consultants in. In terms of programs that are mandated by the federal and state government that may deal with child nutrition, it may be necessary to bring in someone to give us help in that area. With respect to safety and courses where we're pairing kids. We haven't seen an ill effect on that in terms of the performance. Today, again, in looking at how much our schools have risen in terms of their academic performance, we saw complete evidence that our schools are still on the move. They're still doing well, they're still recognized statewide, they're still recognized nationally. So there are some good things happening in spite of the budget cuts that we're having to deal with.
You responded to the second part of the question, but briefly on the first part with combo classes, what was your opinion
basically,
on that?
Basically, I said that we haven't seen any ill effect on being able to group kids. You know, one of the things that we've seen in some other school districts that have been unwilling to make the tough decisions, they're closing their doors. To think that you can run a school district without fiscal discipline is crazy. You've got to be able to make adjustments to make sure that your district is solvent. And that's really the hard decisions that you have to make in a school district. We saw this in San Diego, where San Diego basically refused to deal with some hard budget cuts. San Diego, the second largest school district in the state of California, is very close to state takeover.
And Felton, we'll stay with you for this. It's another specific question related to some budgetary concerns that special ed costs consume a large portion of the budget. What do you think can be done, or what would you like to see be done to cut the portion of the budget while still providing the much-needed services to that portion of the community?
Special ed is one of the categorical programs that is mandated that, and like other categorical programs, it's basically difficult to move dollars out of those programs in other places. And a lot of that comes from the state who mandates those programs or the federal government. And basically, we have to toe the line with respect to mandated programs. The other thing, too, when we talk about staffing, we get mandates from the state, and we get mandates from the federal government that we have to hire certain classes of people. Now, oftentimes when we're told we have to hire, and we have a lot of folks in those categories, sometimes they give us money to pay them. Sometimes they are non-funded. And in the event that they're non-funded, they encroach on our state budgets. We have to figure out ways to pay these people in order to make sure that the federal government doesn't close the door on our funding. So the issue of staffing and funding, while we would like to look at all the creative ways we can to cut costs, and we've done it, and we continue to do it, and we will continue to look at creative ways to cut costs, and at the same time try to keep our people working, but there is a reality at the end of the day, you can only spend what you have. And that's the bottom line. So, you know, while we would like to say that we can do all things, we've seen one school district after another that's been afraid to tackle those hard decisions about budgets. And as a result of that, those school districts are being taken over by the state.
Mr. Ricardo.
In regards to special eds, I mean, we have to make sure that we're following, of course, what's mandated by state and federal. But, you know, when the school district does their budget, I see it right here, 2010, 2011, its net ending balance was $101 million. This year is projected to end $86 million over. So I don't understand that why we're making cuts. If we're really going to put everything on the table, then let's take some of this extra funding and fund special education. In regards to, some of the effects that combo classes is going to take on our classes, we won't see that because the district just started doing that last year. So scores will come out this year, and we'll see what the reality is. 40% of our schools in District 2 only reach over 800. I don't know where he got this two-thirds, but looking at his spreadsheet that he had been passing around, only 7 out of 17 were over 800. And some of them went down from the year before to this year. I think there was 4 schools that their API scores went down. So all these budget cuts are affecting our kids, are affecting the way they're learning. They are affecting their future and their ability to go to a university or go to a vocational, take on good-paying jobs, and then come back to our neighborhoods. So we have to really take this personally because, you know, as a parent, my daughter's in school, and a lot of parents are out here, and they want to know that we're taking care of their kids.
Okay. Ricardo, I'll stay with you. This is a bit of a more specific question, again, budgetary related, is what portion of the budget or what kind of numbers does do the board and the superintendent's pay take up? As if somebody is specifically asking, they heard that there's a lot of money going towards the board and the superintendent in particular, and with the belt tightening all around, I'm sure people are concerned that everybody takes cuts in the same way.
Well, in regards to the budget, this is their budget here, I'll tell you. Show everybody. That's their budget. That's front and back. And Board of Education, it's over, the Board of Education members receive over $200,000. But it doesn't go into specific what it goes to. It might go to a stipend, might go to health coverage, maybe traveling and stuff like that. But in the budget, there's also room for travel and attending conferences, which this year was over $800,000. The year before that, $1.2 million. And before that, $1.7 million for travel and conferences. Superintendent's budget this year is $600,000. But it doesn't go into specific. Our budget needs to be more transparent. It needs to tell us how much salary is going to our superintendent, directors, and supervisors. Because it tells us what we're spending for teachers. It tells us what we're paying for classified employees. But it doesn't tell us what directors are getting. It doesn't tell us how many directors or supervisors are poor employees. So if we have 4 supervisors towards 6 employees, then we're overspending on the top. And we need to cut from the top to the bottom. Because at the bottom, there's teachers who teach. There's nurses that take care of our kids. Safety officers that provide safety for our kids. We shouldn't be taking away from the bottom. We should be taking away from the top.
Milton?
Let me respond to that very quickly. There were non-classroom cuts were approximately 22% non-classroom cuts to administrative positions. Long Beach, in comparison to the schools that we measure ourselves against, has the lowest ratio of administrators to students of the 5 schools we measure ourselves up against. There was no increase in class size amongst grades 4 through 12. We expanded advanced placement courses, AP courses. We increased work-based or link learning programs. In terms of the funds that he talks about in the superintendent's office, I'm going to talk about travel real very quickly, too. The superintendent has money that we have pulled from Title I dollars so that we can provide extra support to those schools that do not receive Title I dollars. And the Title I dollars have helped us do a number of things. They've helped us put additional FTE in certain classrooms where help is very badly needed. And so that's where that money is about, the money that the superintendent's holding, has been pulled from Title I funds. The other thing about Title I money, Title I money is for training. And basically, with Title I money, you are mandated to have your teachers train, and that means training and travel. So we spend a lot of money on training and traveling as part of the Title I money. But that's what makes this district what it is. That's why this district performs like it does, because Long Beach does spend money on training. And we spend a lot of money on training. Given the fact that we spend money on training, and given the fact that our staff work with our teachers to improve what they do, that's how we get the most productivity out of our classrooms, is because our staff supports those folks in terms of things that need to be done to help those teachers improve.
Thank you, Felton. I'll stay with you here. I've gotten a number of questions with a very similar theme questioning the way the layoffs in the past years or two have been dealt with. And a number of people in the audience seem to feel that there was that they were unequally done, that certain schools had to absorb a lot of layoffs while some schools had little or no layoffs. Can you speak to, best of your ability, how those layoffs were done and if that's true that some schools had more than others, you know, why that might be the case or how you feel about that?
Layoffs are based on tenure. Purely and simply on tenure. The least tenured folks, unless they are part of an area that is deemed crucial, then we follow tenure. And the tenure is basically through union contracts. So we follow the union contracts with respect to layoffs. Now, any teacher that receives a layoff notice has a right to appeal that notice. And that appeal process is with an administrative law judge. We've had a number of people who did appeal, and basically the union has to sign off on those appeals saying that they are okay. So basically, when teachers are laid off with less seniority, and this issue came up, brought up by my opponent at Lafayette, the story was, you are hurting our school because you're laying off all of our teachers. We shared with him that when teachers are laid off at one school, we have to move teachers from other schools to backfill those positions. And so there is equal treatment with respect to layoffs in our district because they're negotiated with the union. And we don't deviate from negotiations with the union with respect to layoffs. And the union has to sign off on all of those teachers that are laid off.
Layoffs are based on seniority. But the problem is not the layoffs. The problem is replacing those teachers. If we lay off junior teachers and replace them with more junior teachers, and we have budget cuts again like we're doing this year, the same schools are going to get hit with layoffs again, so there's no stability there. We need to figure out that when we do layoffs, yes, they're based on seniority. Well, let's replace the teachers there with more senior teachers from other schools. We might have to take that with the unions, but at least it's a fair way of replacing the teachers. So to regards to layoffs, we just have to make sure that not the same schools are getting hit. Lafayette did get hit very hard last year, but so did Stark Canyon and North Long Beach. So did Roosevelt, which is also in the district. And with more layoffs coming this year, parents are afraid that the same schools are going to get hit again. And with the class increase, we're going to get less teachers at our schools. Lafayette alone, last year we had over 800 kids. This year we have over 900 kids, and yet we have less teachers. So teachers have more students in their classrooms, they can't focus on teaching when they have to focus on the entire group. So we have to make sure that we're taking a fair approach and a balanced approach to when we're replacing teachers.
I'd like to, that's a follow-up to that question, and if you want to elaborate on some of the things you said there. Since both of you talk about some, you know, different ways of dealing with teacher moving, do you have any specifics that you'd like to offer of either, you know, changes in contract or the way that teachers are dealt with, or things that you think can be done or could be negotiated with the teachers' union or other bodies that we have to deal with as a district?
In regards to contract, that would have to be taken between the union representative and the district. So that would have to be discussed at the table. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yes, when we've had layoffs, and I think it just didn't come out right in terms of the response. But guess what happens? The senior teachers do go in and backfill the less senior teachers. That's exactly what happens. Logically, it has to happen that way. It can't happen any other way. If we've got senior teachers who are still in the district, they have to replace the less senior teachers, and that's what transpires. Now, for all the schools that we've talked about, Roosevelt, Lafayette, guess what happened? Today, their scores went up astronomically. In spite of all the things that were happening with budgets, today we saw 19 schools raise their profile academically. So in spite of the fact that we're having to deal with these horrible cuts, we're still seeing some good results. Now, with respect to the process itself, I'd love to see us being able to retain our good teachers, our young teachers, for one reason. They are your bridge to the future. When the older teachers retire, guess what has to happen? You have to have that continuity in your teaching. So if there's a way for us to sit down with the union and figure out how we can do that, I'm all open for that, because the young teachers come in with the new ideas, the new approaches, the knowledge that will help carry us over the years. And so it's horrendous to be able to cut any of those folks, but again, hard decisions have to be made when you're sitting at that table about your budgets and making sure that you are keeping the doors open into your schools.
All right, Felton, we all, of course, heard about what went on in the recent weeks, or came to light in the LA Unified District with some of the teachers and the abhorrent things that went on between them and some of their students. Is the Long Beach Unified, or do you think there's anything that we can learn from some of the things that went on in LA Unified, it being obviously a larger school district, but with some of the similar problems we may have? And a related question, a combined two questions that people submitted, was that, are any of the cuts, do you feel that they have the potential, the cuts of recent years and some of the ones you're discussing for this year, have the potential to affect security on campus, or the ability to check up on potential problems like some of the awful things that happened up there?
First of all, let me get back to the first part of the question with reference to, the impact of these cuts and what that means. It's always an uncertainty as you're looking at your budget, because what's your priority within your district? First of all, the priority has to be in the classroom and making sure that students are learning the core, reading, writing, math, and science. That's your core. And from there, you build everything else around your core. But if you have to begin cutting, what you want to be able to protect is that core. You want to make sure that you maintain that core. And so you're looking at all the other services in terms of balance. What becomes important in terms of continuity in your district? And everybody who comes before us will tell you one thing. Everything that they do is important, all the way up and down the line. And they're all connected. But you got to make some tough decisions about what has to be cut. If we have to deal with a security issue, we want to make sure that we have partners who are going to help back that up, like Long Beach Police Department. And so far, they have done an excellent job in working with the district. The other thing that we have to be able to have is we have to have a full community rollout in terms of security for our kids. And we just can't leave that to the schools alone. Everybody's got to step up to the plate to make sure that we do our best to protect our schools and our kids. It's a major challenge for us. But surely, as we deal with this budget, we're going to be looking at a lot of issues that are on the table in order to make sure that we get our budget passed by the county.
Thank you. Floor is yours, Ricardo.
As regards to security, we've already seen that take a hit. Some of the workers that stay on campus after school with our kids, their hours got reduced, so they spend less time on campus. They get to go home, and our kids are left on campus, maybe with one or two community workers. So we need to make sure we're funding that. So looking at the budget, making sure that we don't have unnecessary consultants and contractors and stuff like that. Spending $500,000 on software programming compared to having, 50 security officers, I think that it's more important than the software. We need to make sure our kids feel protected, make sure that they feel safe going home. And yes, Long Beach PD is a great partner with Long Beach Unify. But as the city is also taking a hit, and we're losing more police officers. every year. Hopefully next year they can fund a police academy so that we can get new police officers out there. But, you know, 4 years ago, we were told we have to work as a community. We have to partner up with the schools and the city and work together so our schools are safe, that our kids are able to learn. But 4 years went by and nothing's been done. You know, we have parents now who've been involved in the schools, individual schools, and haven't seen the Board of Education there. They haven't seen the superintendent there. We need to make sure we're working with them so that our kids feel safe, they feel included in the process, and be out there in the community. Just because it happened down the streets, away from our schools, doesn't mean that we shouldn't be involved. We should be out there making sure that the community feels safe and they feel that they are being representative.
Hi, Ricardo. Next, start with you this time. The second district is certainly not alone in having a disparity amongst the schools, and there's high-performing schools and low-performing schools, and in between, and many places in between. Can you speak to why do you think that is, and what do you have any specific ideas of how to bring up some of the lower-performing schools to equal some of our best?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, 10 years ago. Our schools were doing pretty good. They were doing pretty great. Graduation rates were high. More students were eligible to attend UC or Cal State. And then we won this board award in 2003. But since then, the school district has pretty much taken a dive. We went from 37% eligible graduating seniors to apply to UC or Cal State. To 36%. So we have to figure out a way to bring back math classes, English classes, science classes back to our high schools. Cabrillo went from 33% eligible graduating seniors to apply to a UC or Cal State to 19%. The only high school in the West Side. And since the district doesn't provide transportation, most of our students go there. And we have a very diverse community. Different races, different backgrounds, different economic levels. But this is the only high school there, and yet less of our students are going or eligible to apply. They can't apply to a UC or Cal State or a university. Poly, which is one of our best schools, you know, if the audience, you know, is aware, Poly, we produce student athletes, went from 58 eligible to apply to UC or Cal State to 48 last 2 years ago. We're doing something wrong. By taking away our math classes, English classes, the A3G requirements that are necessary. I believe health was one of them. Last year, the district changed the requirements and took that away. Even if you go to a community college, it's a requirement. You still have to take it. So why are we cutting our students short?
Felton?
I think that needs to be reversed. 10 years ago, those numbers were not there 10 years ago. Those numbers are here today. Just a bit of data. 2006 and 7, the district received $18 million in scholarships for our students. Today, the district received $50 million in scholarships for our students, with over half of that money coming to schools in Area 2, my district. We've seen an overwhelming change in the number of kids who go on to college. With respect to Cabrillo, these are current numbers. In 2008, we had 809 students enrolled in 12th grade. Out of that, 605 graduated. 400 attended inner college. And these numbers continue to go up to today, where we've seen that number increasing. Now, Cabrillo has many challenges in terms of students' reduced lunch, and a number of students who English is not their first language. So in terms of moving kids through, it takes a lot more time and energy to get the kids up in place where we can make some good things happen. There are some unique challenges at Cabrillo. We have two wonderful principals. They're Dr. Elio Mendoza and Dr. our other principal there, who are both doing a fantastic job in setting the structure and tone for Cabrillo High School.
Okay, thank you, Felton. excuse me. What, again, talking about, you know, some of the specific schools, excuse me, and some of the differences between them. I know some schools, for instance, at my daughter's school, Newcomb, we have a nonprofit foundation that raises money to try to help purchase things for the school and fund programs. I know a few other schools in the city have some similar things. Is that something that that you do or would like to encourage, and how do you encourage that at schools in the district so that they can try to supplement the funding that keeps coming up shorter from the state?
Well, one of the hallmarks of Long Beach, and it's been a hallmark for a number of years, is that we have a couple of things happening. One, we have 500 business partners in the community who support Long Beach Unified School District, probably more than most school districts that you'll see, and they provide a lot of support in terms of resources to our schools. The other thing, that is very, very apparent is that this community understands the importance of stepping up to help the schools, and that's what makes this community so great, is that we have people who not only show their appreciation for our schools, but they provide real hard resources in terms of financial support and also non-financial support to our schools. And just recently, as an example of that, the middle school sports program that we're looking to try to save, and the community stepped up and raised money to help us save our middle school sports program. Now, even though that's a temporary fix, we understand one thing. Long Beach cares about its schools, and they do everything possible to make sure that our schools continue to do the things they need to do.
Carter?
Well, as your next school board member, I would visit every school, work with their PTAs, parent groups, and assist them with raising funds. A lot of the parents need support from the district and don't receive it. And as a school board member, I would make sure that they have the structure so that they are able to raise funds and work with the local businesses around their schools. Lafayette alone, last year, we set a goal of buying printers for our teachers because we only had one printer for the entire teaching staff. One printer for the entire teaching staff, which is around 30 teachers. So the parents got together. We did a fundraiser. We raised a little over $5,000. And we are now able to, well, we have to give the money to the district so that they can come back and issue a check back to the school. But the school can now buy printers for individual teachers. That model is what we need at every school. In regards to saving the middle school program, the sports program, I mean, $300,000, I believe, is what it is. Why not take some of that money from travel and conferences, which is $800,000, and fund the sports program? We have to look at the budget, of course, realistically, so that we can fund what's important to our schools. I mean, sports is necessary because we have an obesity problem, but we have to make sure we're funding our core mission, which is reading, writing, and math. And for some reason, we keep avoiding that. We just have to go back to that.
Thank you, Ricardo. Excuse me. Let's see, we're new question to you, Ricardo. You're a parent at Lafayette, so I assume you can speak to this from firsthand. There's a question about the dual immersion program at Lafayette, and what you think of that program, and you know, would you like to see it at more schools, or is this something that we should see more of in schools in this district?
My daughter's in that program. It's very successful, and you know, we see higher attendance in dual immersion. Our students in that program do much better. Yet, you know, with the layoffs, a lot of our teachers that were there for several years were laid off. And we got new teachers this year. Some of them are having a little trouble adjusting, but, you know, with the parents and the teachers working together and our new principal, which, by the way, she's awesome. She loves parent involvement. She welcomes the community. And, you know, working together, we're able to see that program do much better. You know, our API score didn't go up a whole lot like, you know, Mr. Williams over here said. You know, it went up 5 points. I mean, it still went up, but it's not, you know, a lot. And four of our schools in the district, their API scores went down. You know, our high school, all of our high schools haven't even reached 800 API scores. So we have to make sure that we're taking care of our kids, K through 5, middle school, so that when they get to high school, they're doing much better. I mean, Cabrillo is at 600, Poly's a little over 700 or 730. You know, we need to, again, go back to our core mission. Make sure we're funding math, English, science, so that they can go to college and not take these courses again at community, which, you know, remember, a lot of our kids go because they're not eligible to apply to UC or Cal State.
Sheldon?
Yes, the dual immersion program is alive and well, and the predictions that that program would crash and burn, as stated by my opponent when he came to our board meeting, that did not happen. We spend money, again, on training and training and training. And so all of our teachers are trained to be able to do a number of things for our schools. So if we move teachers from one area to another area, those teachers are able to step in and do what they have to do. Of course, there is transition for teachers to be able to go from one school to another, but they have handled that fairly well. Now, in terms of programs, that's the dual immersion program is one of the excellent programs that's coming out of our schools. It's so good that we're going to expand the dual immersion program to our upper level schools, and that will happen within the next year. We will expand the dual immersion program beyond the elementary school. Again, we do spend money on training and development, but it does yield results. The results it yields in terms of the kids who are going on to college, in terms of our the performance of our schools, speaks for itself. The numbers, the graduation numbers and the achievement scores, they speak for themselves. Now, schools don't become good overnight. It takes time. And that's what we're seeing with respect to a number of our schools. But again, our schools are performing much better than we're hearing the reports that are coming out. Thank you.
I'm going to ask you both a question that's specific for you without rebuttal, since it's the questions that have come in there, and both of you have sort of been speaking about the topic towards the other candidates. So, Felton, the first one be for you is about, Ricardo has mentioned a couple of times, travel and conference and some of the budgetary items. Is there savings to be had in that portion of the budget? Is there waste? What's your opinion on that portion of the budget that's been mentioned a couple of times?
Well, I've referred to that at least two or three times. Title I money from the federal government requires that you do training, and that includes travel. And because of the training and travel, our schools are what they are, and the performance of our schools are what they are. But again, that money in Title I is earmarked for training and travel. So if you're going to cut back on that, you're basically saying to the feds, we don't want your Title I money. And so that money is not coming out of our general fund, the money that's used to pay our teachers. Again, that money is coming out of Title I, and it's coming out of grants.
Okay. Ricardo, a specific question for you. You've talked about a number of things that you feel are in danger of being cut from the budget or that have already been cut in services. What are some of the specific, belt-tightening, hard, hard decisions that that you're willing to make, would you be on the board considering the budget shortfalls in the future?
Right. First of all, I would ask the superintendent to give me a real budget, not this handout that he gives to the board with more specific items on what we're spending our money with. You know, Felton talks about travel, you know, being from Title I. Title I is supposed to go to our schools, not to travel and attend conferences. They're supposed to go to our schools directly, but the superintendent chose to take that money away and use it for his office. And secondly, those two items are different in the budget. The superintendent has his own budget, $600,000, and then travel and conferences is $800,000 for this year. So I don't understand what Felton said, that the superintendent is using Title I funds, and then he's saying that he's using it for travel and conferences. So we have to, I would ask the superintendent, be specific on what we're spending our money on, because a lot of this stuff is overlapping, according to Mr. Williams over here. So so that we can make the hard decisions that we need to, so that we can preserve our core classes like math, English, and science.
Ricardo. So let's hear from both of you a little bit about your involvement in the community and some of your qualifications here. Ricardo, talk about your involvement in the community. What kind of community groups do you attend or are you a member of? Are you a member of the Wrigley Association or any other groups within your district?
Well, I think I didn't pay my dues last for this year, so I'm not a member of Wrigley for this year, but I've been a member of Wrigley Association, and I've been coming to these meetings for several years. Not just Wrigley, but I've attended the Wrigley Alliance, I attended Long Beach Neighborhood Association, I attend the Washington Middle School Neighborhood Association, Community Partners Council, which is more down to south, you know, I attend parent meetings at my daughter's school. I've been a commissioner for the city for 4 years. I've worked on redevelopment for a couple years. I've been a parent leader at my daughter's school, like I said, and I've served in the Marine Corps for 8 years. I've worked at Long Beach City College in the Success Center, where we take our students that come from our high schools and making sure that they're taking tutors in remedial math and remedial writing and remedial composition. I've worked at Cal State Long Beach, where I've actually recruited for the school at Cabrillo and Jordan and some of our local schools. Sadly to say that a lot of our kids weren't eligible to attend. So a lot of them go to Long Beach City College, where, I mean, they've done great. I attended Long Beach City College. You know, I got my AA degree there and then transferred to Cal State Long Beach, where I earned my BA as a working parent and working full-time job. So I've been involved in my community for a very long time. This is where I grew up. This is where I'm going to be for a long time. I'm going to raise my family here. And I see the... Sorry, thanks.
Felton, about your community involvement.
I am a member of WANA. I'm also a member of the West Side Neighborhood Association. Have been for a number of years. I'm a member of the Long Beach PTA. I've been a commissioner in the city of Long Beach, serving on a number of commissions. I was also a member of the Ethics Task Force for the City of Long Beach, board member for the College of Business Administration at Long Beach State, and also served on the Alumni Association at Cal State University, Long Beach. I consider myself to be very active in the community and make sure that I attend a number of meetings in the community. Things that keep making sure that we are able to listen to the concerns of the people in the community and respond to those concerns.
All right, I think this will be our last question, and then both of you have a chance to give some closing statements to the audience. And as a result of, or as a way of dealing with some of the budget cuts, the district has utilized instructional aides who have not worked full-time hours. So by doing this, we can have a staff person or a teacher or different level position that comes in just below benefit level, and thus saving the district money. What do you think of this practice, gentlemen? And is this something that you think we should or shouldn't continue in the future as both cost cutting and as good policy?
Instructional aides are only there to provide support to a regular classroom teacher. The law specifies what has to happen in the classroom. The law specifies the credentials that a person must have to teach in the classroom. And all of our teachers in the classroom, lead teachers, meet those standards. The aides are there to support the teachers in the classroom.
If we're going to hire instructional aides, I believe we should hire college students so that we can help them pay for college. It's not just in the school district. It's happening around where a company hires a person short under a full-time employee so that they don't pay health benefits or retirement or stuff like that. Honestly, I think it's unfair. To the employee, to his family or her family. If we're going to hire a person to do a full-time job, then that person should get paid full-time and receive the benefits that come with it. A lot of our teachers do have the credentials, but we do have some instructional aides that teach in Head Start. And a lot of them have AA degrees, which is required, in early education. But Head Start, was proposed to be eliminated this year, along with the instructional aides. We're cutting a program that's been successful for decades in preparing our kids to enter kindergarten, first, second, and third grade, and then we're proposing to cut it, to eliminate it. It is not making sense. We need to make sure we preserve Head Start. We need to make sure that we're preparing our kids so that when we do get them in elementary, they can continue to be successful and go on to fourth, fifth, and onwards. Thank you.
All right. It's time for our closing remarks. There was still other questions, a lot of great questions from the audience tonight, and I appreciate that. Unfortunately, we don't have time to get to all of them. After the closing remarks, I assume both gentlemen will be here. We will be here. There'll be plenty of time for you to buy cookies for my daughter, as well as to meet both of the candidates, whichever is more important. Both the candidates will be here, and they've got some materials in the back about their candidacy as well. So if you didn't get your question answered, please approach one or both of the gentlemen to get your question answered. Ricardo, you got to choose at the beginning, so let's get Felton. Would you like to go first or second this time around? Okay, it's up to you. And let's do 5 minutes for closing remarks.
Well, I want to thank everyone for coming out and, being informed about the issues. I grew up in Long Beach. I attended schools here, and now I'm raising my family. If elected, I will be the only board member with a child attending school. So I will share not just the parents' concerns, but the rest of the community, that when we need help, we look towards our elected officials. And we hope that those elected officials are responsive to our needs. Not just be a member of an organization, but actually show up once in a while, actually talk to the parents, talk to the families, talk to the employees, and making sure we're listening to their concerns. Because when we go to the board meeting and we make the tough decisions, we look at everybody's approach. I share the parents' concerns. I grew up in Long Beach, making sure that we make a better Long Beach and a safe Long Beach for our kids to grow up with. This year, they talk about we're an award-winning district. Yes, in 2003. But remember, Mr. William wasn't elected in 2004. He was not part of that award-winning school system. And ever since then, we've been playing catch-up. Our district we hit a rock bottom in 2005, 2006, and we've been playing catch-up ever since. We have to bring back accountability. We have to bring back transparency. We have to make sure that we have a board member that is responsive to the needs of the community. And with your help, on April 10th, When you cast that ballot for Ricardo Linares, the second one on the ballot, I will make sure that we bring transparency. I will be in the community, not once in a while, not every 4 years, but every time that you have a meeting. You have my cell phone. It's on my website, ricardolinares.com. You have my email. I will respond to the needs of the community if I'm elected. And I will make sure that your voice is being heard on the board, not just the administrators, but the teachers, classified employees, and working families. I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight and being informed. Thank you.
I want to also thank the folks who have come out tonight to listen to the discussion about our schools and the fact that we have some of the greatest schools in the state of California. All the things that we've talked about in terms of declining schools, just let me read some facts to you. World-class district, Long Beach Unified is one of the world's top 20 school systems. Newsweek's best high schools, Newsweek's most recent national ranking of America's best high schools, listed Wilson Classical High School, Poly, Millikan, Lakewood, Avalon, Academy of Math and Science is among the top 6% of U.S. high schools. Harvard book highlights Long Beach, the first book to detail examples of successful large-scale reforms in the nation's most improved urban districts. It was released from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Stanford Report lauds LBUSD. U.S. News and World Report top schools. Scholarship reached record levels. UC Berkeley praises LBUSD leadership. U.S. Chamber of Commerce calls LBUSD a national leader. Higher education experts say LSUSB has national model. Australian Prime Minister likes Long Beach Unified School District. Top rated by Sports Illustrated. National Blue Ribbon Schools, first in the nation. College enrollment increases. High ratings from Standard and Poor. National Title I achieving schools. Exemplary Head Start. And on and on and on. This school district has done some phenomenal things and it continues to do some phenomenal things. And in terms of the role that I may have played in any of that, along with my partners, I'm very, very pleased. I've visited every single one of my schools more than once. And as he talks about being visible, I was visible at his school when he brought the parents in. And he's raising his finger to say to just, I mean, which is very impolite. But the fact is, it doesn't matter how many times you get out there. I visited Lafayette at least 10 times. At least 10 times. So that's a fact. And the fact that he doesn't know that makes a statement. But I am very, very close to the people out there. And I've challenged my people, the people in the schools, with one thing. We need to make sure that these kids are ready to move on. And they have done that. Basically, they have done that. They've met that challenge. And it was evident today when we saw the awards that they met that challenge. So our schools are performing. They continue to do well. And they will do better. And under the kind of leadership that we have on that board, to include my leadership, I guarantee you that we will do one thing. We will continue to have a first-class school system in Long Beach. I want to thank you all very much for being here tonight, and I really appreciate your support and look forward to your vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Let's have a round of applause for both of our candidates tonight. Thank you both very much for stepping forward.